Good morning. We'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's study session, Mesa City Council, Thursday, September 16th, 2010. On the agenda today, we have several items, and we're going to juggle up the order a little bit, if that's okay with everybody. We've got an update on the Chicago Cubs negotiations that we need to take care of because we have a potential for some discussion, or at least we want to leave open the potential for some discussion and perhaps direction on this matter, and that's why it's item number three on the agenda. But what I'd like to propose is that we go into executive session, get that update right now, and then we will come back and take up the agenda as it's listed.
So moved.
So I have a motion from Councilmember Summers, second Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we'll move into executive session. Hopefully we'll make it quick and brief, but there are no guarantees.
See in and out.
So,
are you talking to me or?
Everybody. So we'll be back, and I apologize, but we'll be back as soon as we get this update done. Thank you for your patience. What we're going to do is that since we were just in executive session talking about Cubs, we're going to go to item number three on the agenda first. Which to discuss and provide directions on the Chicago Cubs spring training facilities. And Mr. Brady, we'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to bring the council up to date in our ongoing discussions with Waveyard, with the Cubs and the development there. We've had some very productive conversations about the arrangements, and negotiations, and expanding the MOU. We're hoping to continue to create a dialogue, to create an outline that we'll be able to bring to the council, and we've discussed today, and bring out publicly more details of the terms of the agreement. But also, I think it's important for council to know we've also been had some very productive conversations with the representatives from Waveyard as we look at the different sites for the facilities for the Cubs. We've obviously one of those considered is Riverview, and we've had some really good conversations with them about how we can move forward in a productive way so that both the city, the Cubs, and the Waveyard could be accommodated, whether there's an opportunity to do everything on the same site or whether there's an opportunity for us to create, to purchase from the Waveyard folks the studies that they've done in order to give them some compensation for them if the project doesn't move forward. One of the things that we do need direction from council on as we move forward is, as we've focused on Riverview and that part of the conversation, we do have the three sites that we've really been talking about: Northeast Mesa, downtown, and the Riverview site. Downtown, we continue to look at the different sites that might be available here and how that would work. And obviously, we'd already previously spent time in Northeast Mesa. So one of the things we would like to get from council in order for us to move forward more directly with the discussions, negotiations with the Cubs, in order to be able to provide more detail of the arrangements, is begin to start narrowing the sites in which we could focus on. So,
okay, Councilmember Summers.
Chris, can you characterize the discussion with the Waveyard? Do you feel that we've moved far enough along in discussions between Waveyard and the Cubs where we could focus our efforts on that site and perhaps come up with an agreement that works? The Waveyard component I like because it adds that 365-day-a-year attraction on the site. So if that were incorporated in it, that changes the flavor considerably. How well are discussions coming along?
I would characterize our conversations as being very productive and mutually working towards goals that we both have, so they've been very productive in the very recent last few days, where I think the individuals from Waveyard are willing to consider only focusing on the water park component of their development, and if that can be accommodated on the site with the requirements for the Cubs baseball headquarters, which includes the spring training and other community amenities on the Riverview site, then I think there is an opportunity for some very productive conversations that have been had. And we're working with the direction of council, we'd like to work diligently to see if there is the space that we can program all these activities on there and see if there's a way to make that work. So that's where we're going.
Chris, it seems like, you know, you talked about the three sites. It seems like there hasn't been a whole lot of discussion on the northeast site. Is that basically, I mean, the Cubs have come out and stated their preference, which I'm assuming they're not working with the landowners around there. Is that...
That's correct. And I think, Mayor and Council, it's based off a couple of different elements. Certainly the retail analysis that we shared with the Council last week, or was last week, as well as some of the preliminary reports that the Cubs are completing and hope to release fairly shortly, and their analysis of that location, while I think it's from many perspectives, it's very attractive. It's probably one of the most beautiful settings in Mesa, that location. I think the larger concern is the ability to attract, in their perspective, the regional commercial development that they're seeking to do with the entertainment facilities, entertainment or retail facilities. So they have, if you would, kind of based on that analysis, have kind of become less interested in that site as something that will work from a larger draw. And so, yeah, I would say that that's become less of a focus.
Does it benefit us then to continue leaving that on the table, or should we just focus our energies on? Yeah. It seems like the energies are being focused one way or another,
right,
on Riverview right now.
Right.
And would it be in everyone's best interest just to maybe take that site off
the
table? Or?
Yeah, it would certainly help council if we could narrow this down to a site of focus, because that would allow us then to really focus on the negotiations and an agreement that we could provide more details of an agreement if we had one specific site to consider in the agreement. That makes a significant difference in agreements like this. You can only go so far until we need a site to determine everything from the program of how things are going to lay out and the cost for the city, whether it's infrastructure, bringing it to the site or even on site, what those impacts might be to the city. And so those are very important considerations, and the site certainly having a focus on a specific site and getting that narrowed down would be very helpful.
Vice Mayor?
Also understanding that in negotiations, as you're working on a project like this, there's changes every day. It's nothing is set, and what you discussed one week may totally change by the next week, and we've experienced that many times. And so it's readily apparent that the Cubs are primarily focusing on Riverview, and we all understand that. We've got that message, and we need to narrow it down for an election, but we don't want to take all our cards off the table. So as much as I would like downtown, I understand how the whole scheme works out at Riverview, and we need to narrow it down. And we've already talked about eliminating the northeast because the Cubs aren't even looking at that at all. But we need to have a backup, not necessarily focusing a lot of time on it, but at least knowing that something could change down the road. Probably not, but it could. So we still look at possible options, and if something arises, we're not totally eliminating the downtown. It's a backup position. But the primary focus is Riverview, and I think that's pretty much the message we've been getting.
Okay. Councilman Finkel?
Vice Mayor beautifully stated my perception and my position, so I appreciate it. Exactly what he said.
Okay. Councilman Summers?
Out of curiosity, because people are going to ask, I want to leave the retail part of this aside, because this is not a retail deal. I want to leave Wrigleyville West aside. This is a vote for Mesa to keep the Cubs. We have a 50-year relationship with the Cubs. They are a fabric of this community, and that's what we are proposing to spend this money on, is to continue that relationship with the Cubs. So the downtown site, well, at this point I'd almost call it a close backup. What is it from a baseball perspective that makes
Riverview more attractive than downtown from the Cubs baseball perspective?
I think for the Cubs that their emphasis on being able to keep the play, that when they have all, so many of the players here at one time, being able to keep them in close proximity to one another and be able to, so having a consolidated campus that's contiguous, and being able to have, you know, as they rotate around to different fields or different activities, being able to have that in a much more compact area, contiguous area, it has become a significant issue for them. And while downtown, we can physically meet the programming as far as the different fields and buildings, they are somewhat spread out. It's more of a...
So from Fitch Park through Escobedo down to Site 17, which yeah. was the proposal, that's... How far is that?
More than a quarter of... It's probably
a half mile.
Half mile, yeah, from the far end to the one end, yeah.
So it kind of comes down to, can, from an operations standpoint, right. that makes it difficult?
They certainly expressed that, and being able to... keep all their players again, and being able to they rotate to different stations and different activities during their practices.
One thing that I found interested in just recently, they seem to be focusing more on this headquarters, baseball headquarters, which is different, which is unique to the Cubs, because they utilize these facilities different than other teams do, because they have much more of a year-round presence. Has that factored into, or has that come up in your talks with them?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, we really want to continue to focus on titling this, if you would, a Western headquarters, baseball headquarters for the Cubs. And the spring training, in many ways, while it, from a public standpoint, it's a very active period of time, from the Cubs and the utilization of the baseball facilities, it only represents a much smaller portion of their year-round activities, as well as the number of staff that continue to stay here in Mesa to run their minor league activities is fairly significant.
And all their scouting and all their other
Absolutely.
Baseball operations. Their baseball operations are basically headquartered out of here.
The baseball operations will be headquartered and continue to be headquartered in Mesa. So, you know, from a corporate standpoint, we get the corporate
and
headquarters for that.
I haven't had that many discussions with them, but it seems like that's become more and more of an important and central role in their facilities, and it seems like they've even evolved in some of those.
Correct.
Those
I think that, yes.
Vice Mayor, then.
Yeah, that is a critical point, because people think of Cubs as being spring training just for that the month of March, and it's much more than that. That's when you have all the exhibition games. But from an operational standpoint, they are year-round here. They have their instructional leagues, their fall league. They have the rehabilitation for people who are still on the roster that have to do rehab. They're here at Fitch Park all the time. And if we try to include Fitch Park in a downtown site, you eliminate the backfill of Hohokam. And so really, from an operational standpoint, what the Cubs are looking for is a full-blown year-round facility that they utilize now, Fitch, year-round.
Councilman Summers.
Mayor, I don't think it's any surprise that I support the downtown site, because it's been a strategic initiative of this council to revitalize, reinvigorate, bring jobs to the downtown area. That said, it's not going to work for the Cubs, and that's not their preferred site, then nothing we're going to be able to do will draw them here. I think at this point it would be a valuable use of staff time if we were to focus our efforts on Riverview, to look how we maximize that site. Let's be clear, the goal of the election in November is to keep the relationship with the Cubs and to keep the Cubs as a fabric of and a part of the identity of the city of Mesa, which it has been for 50 years. The activity we bring in there isn't going to pay us back in dollars directly. But there is something to be said for the community spirit and the involvement that the Cubs have, and that's what we're voting on in November. I think we should focus at this point on one site. We go to the voters with a very clear, very clearly with where that site is,
And the direction to staff should be that we absolutely maximize the benefit of that site by having continued negotiations with the Waveyard folks, by holding the Cubs to their end of the bargain of creating a Wrigleyville West and maximizing that benefit, and making what the mayor has described as really a regional draw. This has to be something special in order for it to work. So with that, Mayor, that's my suggestion.
Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I also agree with what has been said by the other council members. I also agree with Mr. Brady's suggestion of continuing to work to flesh out the outline for what our agreement will be. I think it's important. Hopefully we can bring that back next week for the council to review, because I think the more details we can make available to the public, the better informed they will be in terms of reviewing the issues related to the election. And I think that the discussions have made a lot of progress in terms of identifying the important issues from the city's perspective, and that hopefully we'll be able to move forward to release that additional detail next week. Thank you.
Yeah. Councilman Fender.
One perspective Vice Mayor brought up about the backfill. I think that's an important component of information that folks need to make some decisions, and it would be nice here in the next couple of weeks to have some detailed, whatever possibly can be brought to the public about those efforts, who's involved, the partnerships, anything that might be able to help dispel or deal with some of the concerns about what do we do with an existing facility. So, thank you.
Okay. Any comments?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
I'd just like to say one thing, and we were talking about downtown. I want to make it clear that I support focusing on the Riverview site, not because specifically the Cubs have stated that. I think there's a reason why the Cubs looked at Riverview, and if you look at some of their plans and if you look at what we can create there, it's pretty incredible. I would not go where anyone wanted to go if it wasn't for the benefit of this community. And I can make a good argument on every side. I think one of the great problems we had is that we had four good areas, each of which could be successful in their own right. They're very unique, and they create different opportunities, but the Cubs could have been successful, and the city of Mesa could have been successful, and the community could have been successful in any of the four general areas we were looking at. It's become clear that the Cubs have focused in on Riverview, and as we've looked at Riverview more and more, that there are some pretty special things that can be accomplished at Riverview that can't be accomplished elsewhere. That's just one of the positives about that area. I think that I'm encouraged with the recent talks you've had with the Waveyard, and that makes me feel much more comfortable in saying that we possibly could not only work some sort of accommodation, but perhaps work toward a win-win, which would really make that area a great area. So I will support focusing on the Riverview site simply because I think that that's the place where we have the greatest potential of creating a pretty special place. And you know that's in addition to keeping the Chicago Cubs. So I'm confident that we'll do something right. I'm confident that we'll, as we work down those details. And remember, we're not starting from scratch just because there's a site. But it has become obvious that as we work from the general framework that the MOU provides for us, and which spells out the basic deal points, that hasn't changed, and it's not going to change. I mean, I know a lot of people have asked me, well, that's not legally binding. Well, you know, to me, you sign an agreement, it's binding. I don't care what it says. You make an agreement, you stick to it. And that's what we have done with the MOU. You know, the amount that the city has committed to the stadium has not changed. The basic parameters have not changed. But you can only go so far until you have a specific piece of dirt that you're looking at. And I think that's what we've found. And, you know, obviously Waveyard created an obstacle to that. And the fact that we've been able to have very positive talks with them about how we can accommodate that creates some pretty exciting possibilities. And I'd love to focus our efforts on making that happen. And to me, Riverview is the best place for that to happen. Dave.
Since this happens to fall in my district, the thing I hear from the neighbors And they tell me why they supported Wave Yard, and it was because it was special. It was well-designed. It was high quality. It was a special thing. They didn't want to give up a bunch of green space in the community for nothing. You know, they would never accept average retail or an auto mall or apartments or industrial or anything there. They want to see something special if they're going to give up that kind of space in the community. And so there's a couple of things I think that must be in the agreement. One, it's the preservation of Riverview, the public component of Riverview Park. We have to preserve that as a park in the community. It will not be developed on. We need to be very clear that it won't be developed on. The thing I'm hearing from you, Mayor, is very encouraging, and I think it's great that really looking at Riverview as developing it as Mesa's signature park, a spectacular place that, you know, can be compared along that whole corridor, like Tempe Town Lake Park is a real gathering space for the community. I think Riverview Park has that same potential, and so being really clear with the public that the park is staying, that we will not be developing the park. The other is that any development we do there, if it includes Wave Yard, if it includes Cubs, if it has retail, whatever it is, it's special. It's spectacular. It's of a quality that would fit anywhere in the valley. And that standards aren't compromised because of Mesa. And I hear that consistently from this council, and I've always appreciated that about this council, that we would focus on that kind of quality. So I think being clear about those two components, I think my neighbors generally would support that.
Can I take one of your components and go further? I would not be satisfied if the park simply stayed there. I think we have a unique opportunity with the Riverview Park, the lake portion, the public area portion, to redo that and create significant upgrades to that and really create a special place, because we can integrate that now in with the complex. And I see a unique opportunity here to take what we have and make it so much better and make something that not only the citizens of that area but the entire city can really be proud of. And in and of itself will be a draw. So we have a unique opportunity. So. The idea that we would leave that untouched, I think we'd be missing a great opportunity. As I look at the initial ideas that have been floated, that's one thing that excites me is that the potential for taking what is already a good park and making it really a great park and truly creating a special public place with amenities that everyone in the community would be proud of.
Okay? I second the motion. All in favor?
Okay, so if I could summarize very quickly. It appears as though the direction are that we will remove the northeast site from our efforts right now, that we will focus on the Riverview site and focus our activities in working out the details as it relates to a potential or to the facility, the Cubs facility on the Riverview site, and working out those details, and also continuing our discussions and negotiations with Wave Yard and seeing how that plays out, with the potential of perhaps accommodating a Wave Yard development as part of the site, if that's possible.
The water park portion.
Yes. Okay, I have nods all around, so that's your direction.
Thank you.
So we're going to focus on Riverview.
Thank you.
And I'm hoping that over the next few days or week or so, we can maybe make public or release some of the initial ideas or fine-tune some of those ideas as it relates to things I've talked about, because we've seen pictures and we promised pictures, and I know we can get some pictures and some initial renderings and things that the Cubs have and that we have, and I'm hoping we can pull that together in the next week or so and make that available to the public.
Okay.
Is that possible?
We'll work on it, yes.
We'll work on it. Okay. Good. All righty. Thank you. I'd love it, but not that lucky.
There's a motion on the floor in a second.
Now that we've taken care of the unimportant, boring stuff, let's go to the really big stuff. Mr. Butler, first item on the regular agenda is to hear presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the proposal to accelerate. And actually, this is pretty exciting. To accelerate State Road 802.
It is, Mayor, and I'll also assume that really big stuff is referring to the freeway and not to me. So just
you're the exciting part.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you, Mayor.
Oh, God, really?
I'll take it. Mayor, Council, good morning. And I will move quickly through this. I know you've already had a long morning. We have some additional presentations. And this is not your first exposure to the issue, but we come to you this morning hoping to get some council direction on proceeding with the construction phase, advancing the construction phase of State Route 802, the Gateway Freeway. If council so chooses and so directs, we would then, after a resolution is adopted at September 27th, council meeting authorizing the city manager to enter into an intergovernmental agreement between ADOT and the Maricopa Association of Governments, much like we did when we advanced the design and right-of-way of the project. And again, the city will issue highway project advancement notes, a mechanism established by the state to advance freeway construction, and then the city will be reimbursed through MAG with Prop 400 funds. Brief history, again, this started back, our advancement effort started back in 2006, about the time Councilmember Summers.
So our acceleration efforts are now 4 years old.
The acceleration efforts are four years old.
Isn't that a great description of how government works?
Yes. It's also, Mayor, a real testament to what the economy has done, frankly, in the last few years. This all began, as you probably remember, with the state establishing a highway advancement fund when they had a $1 billion budget surplus in 2006. Well, those times quickly changed, and in 2009, those funds were swept by the legislature. Right as we were getting ready to proceed with the project. We had actually approved the project before the funds were swept. We came back later that year, fortunately, in 2009, and were able to find a mechanism to use regional funds to advance the right-of-way acquisition and the design costs for the project. And in fact, some right-of-ways already being purchased now, and they're starting final design on the project currently as well. So the project's moving along as planned, which we're happy to report. Also in 2009, we were able to convince the legislature, even though that they had swept $20 million, to restore $10 million that would be set aside for the construction phase of the project. And we were able to have that inserted into the state budget in 2009. So why do we come before you now? Really, three reasons. Two somewhat negative, but at least one very positive. Some of the time constraints that we're facing, obviously the state budget situation has not improved any since those days in 2009. There's still many challenges on the state budget. And, of course, we continue the concern that unless these funds are obligated for construction, that they may be swept again by the state legislature. Secondly, and more recently, the MAG region's been informed by the Environmental Protection Agency that we may be in default in our compliance with clean air regulations. And in fact, staff will be bringing a presentation to council in the coming weeks, I know, to talk a little bit about the impacts that we'll have on this. But how it impacts this this project is the potential would be that the MAG transportation plan is frozen as of January 2011, which would not allow projects to be advanced. And so we would like to make sure that we get this project advancement done before the conformity freeze, as it's described by the federal government, goes into place potentially in January of 2011. But now on the positive side, and we'll get into this a little bit more too in the presentation, this is a great time to be investing in infrastructure, and we have seen bids and pricing unlike we've never have never seen on major pieces of infrastructure like this, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, but that's certainly a good reason that we need to be investing in infrastructure at this time. And we'll go right into that. Initially, construction costs just a few years ago when MAG updated its financial modeling, the revised estimates for the construction phase of this project were $158 million. Now, as we enter final design, ADOT has provided an engineer's estimate that shows currently the costs are coming in at $119 million. So we have the potential to save Prop 400 $40 million by proceeding, nearly $40 million by proceeding now and advancing this project. Also,
I'm sorry. You need to have a pause. Save $40 million.
Yes, I know.
Wow.
Yes, okay. Wow. Yes.
I want to make sure that pause is in there for effect.
Exactly. It's a substantial savings to the region at a time where certainly freeway projects have had to be scaled back and delayed. It's a major opportunity for Mesa to assist the region in saving $40 million.
Did I hear you say $40 million?
$40 million.
I just want to make sure that's clear.
I'm noting the dramatic.
I want to make sure I wasn't reading this wrong.
Yes. What we will do, though, if the...
All right.
And if so directed by council, the city will actually issue $130 million in highway project advancement notes. That's at the request of ADOT to provide an additional buffer in case any cost.
We don't have to issue, though, if the construction costs don't equal. This is just an authorization.
Exactly.
It's better to be $10 million long than $1 million short.
It's the up-to amount on this, and it authorizes us to issue up to that.
But we'll just issue HPANs for the actual costs that are
incurred,
which we hope are around $119 million, which would make it about $40 million less than the original estimates.
And in fact, Mayor, the good news is that, as in typical fashion, ADOT's being very conservative by asking for this additional buffer. The $119 million, I should note, has a 14% buffer for contingency, thank you, for change orders and other things.
Which is pretty aggressive.
It's a pretty aggressive contingency savings in the 119.
So are you saying it's a potential that the actual cost could be more than $40 million?
Yes, Mayor. We have the potential to save over $40 million to the region. On a $130 million issuance, and so we want to give you the worst-case scenario on this, under $130 million, the interest cost that would be required in order to service the debt would be $22.9 million. So the way the math works out and eventually getting into the impact on Mesa, if you start with interest cost of $22.9 million, to be exact, with our current estimates, you subtract the $10 million from the state allocation. We also get some interest earnings by the time we issue the HPANs before we actually spend the money. That's about $1.7 million. It brings us down to $11.2 million. And of that, per the MAG acceleration policy, we would split that cost 50-50 between the MAG region and the city of Mesa. So under the worst-case scenario, $5.6 million is how much the city of Mesa would spend on the advancement effort. We do believe, though, with strong belief, that it will be lower than that amount, potentially dramatically lower than that amount. But until the final design numbers come in, we want to give you the worst-case scenario and hopefully do better. And just for a little bit of comparison to remember where we were back when we first started talking about this in 2006 and 2007 and even 2008 when council still advised to proceed with this. At that time, we were talking about an impact to the city of $22.7 million, and transportation has allocated that, set aside that amount.
Let's make this clear. So when you say allocated or set aside, $22.7 has already been budgeted.
Correct.
So, I mean, because the first question is, well, $5.6 million, where are we going to get that? Mm-hmm. What you're saying is that it's already been budgeted. It's
in
our capital improvement budget. Therefore, this $5.6 million is not that we have to go out and find it. It's already there. Not only is it there, but
it's a heck of a lot lower than
that. Not quite $40
million.
But it's, what would that be, 17?
17.1.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually coming in at a little over $17 million, less than we have already budgeted for this project.
Under our worst case.
And we think that $5.6 million is probably a little bit high.
That's correct, Mayor.
Okay. Good. Vice Mayor.
And we're talking about the 802, just a quick refresher for people who may not know, because it's been a while.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's coming off the 202 right by Haas Road. How long is the segment cutting across the old proving ground?
Mayor and Vice Mayor, it's about a one-mile segment that connects.
Plus the including the interchange.
Mayor, the major cost is associated with the interchange, with the ramp system and the bridge work that obviously is associated with that first mile. The second component to that is just to Mayor and Vice Mayor, to your point as well, what this really has allowed us to do is already begin discussions with ADOT and at the behest of the airport and even our friends at Sky Harbor, who said learn from our mistakes and don't repeat them, is to get ahead of the issue of the East Side Terminal. that will eventually be built at Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport and allow us to design a highway system and connections that will benefit ingress and egress from the airport and the millions of passengers that will operate out of the east side.
And Allegiant added two more routes.
Yeah, and to make your point, right now I believe the passenger counts and the growth of Gateway are running at least five, if not more, years ahead.
Yeah, you heard the number
of where they were.
Yeah, Mayor and Council, we had been hearing the last several years that 2018 would be the time that the build out on the current passenger terminal would reach capacity. We're now hearing estimates just this week from the airport that 2014, even with all the expansion that's going on today, 2014 is when the physical constraints kick in on the current terminal location.
Yeah, and I think it's actually going to, I think it's going to hit before that, because that's based on what's happening. We're going to hit 1 million passengers probably this year in and out of that area. And if you fly out of there, parking's now becoming an issue. I mean, it's a great problem to have. We're running out of room there on the west side, so we've got to go to the east side. And without this 802, the east side is much more problematic. This makes a lot more sense, because it gives direct freeway access to that east side, which means that won't be an issue when we go to move the terminals or build the terminals on the east side.
That's correct. And I Mayor, I think that was really some sobering news in a very positive way that Allegiant is doing so well that now 4 or 5 years ahead of capacity schedule, which presents the good kind of challenges.
Again, we need to be ready for when the economy improves, because we do have other airlines that would love to at least seriously consider Gateway, and right now it's just not the right time. Allegiant's doing great, but we would have a difficult time accommodating more airlines with the space that we have available on the west side. So for us to move forward, we need to get to that east side, and we need to get there as soon as we can, and that's going to happen faster than what anyone ever imagined. Which, what a great problem to have.
This is the first,
but it's still a problem
to get there.
And Mayor, we should probably also note too that some of our biggest fans of this project are actually our neighbors to the south, both in Queen Creek and also in Santan Valley. The 80,000 some people, I believe it is, that live in unincorporated Santan Valley. Obviously, north-south transportation in that region, in that area of the city, is very challenging for folks who are commuting into Maricopa County to work. And this will be another opportunity to help address some of the traffic concerns that are also happening in the Southeast Valley.
So if my math is correct, if we're saving, what was it, about $40 million on construction?
Over $40 million.
By the time we get done. And there's another $16 or $17 million that's budgeted in potential savings on the interest to the city of Mesa, then we're looking at, close to $60 million by advancing this, that we can look in real savings, plus then earlier access to the east side of Gateway, which accelerates development in the area, which will create more activity and bring those jobs faster, and it'll help the traffic flow from the south to the north by giving them, certainly up Ellsworth, direct access to the freeway. It's not a real stretch for me to see this as a good deal.
Mayor, staff believes there's a lot of positives. It's been 4 years of hard work from transportation, from finance, our outside counsel at Gus Rosenfeld, Brian Raines, and Dan Clevenger, Alan Sanderson, Jeff Martin, the whole crew that's been working on this effort for 4 years. And we really think there are a lot of positives going ahead and delivering this infrastructure at this time for the city.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Butler?
Not any questions, but it might be a good time to mention Haas Road of what's happened there.
Yeah, if you give us a quick update.
Haas Road.
Good time for Ray, the Ray Road.
Ray Road.
The date. Anybody have the date? Yeah.
We are getting near completion of construction for Haas and Ray, connecting Ray Road from Sossaman to Ellsworth and extending the Haas Road down into, connecting into Ray Road, which will begin opening that up. And so we're going to be having a community event coming up to kick off the opening of what's called Rockin' on Ray, which will be 16th. October 16th.
16th.
Saturday morning. I believe it starts 7, 8 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, and I think there'll be a
lot like the 5K freeway
run.
Yeah.
That morning, there'll be all kinds of free activities. Let everybody go and run and walk the road before we open it up. So
5K run. Anybody want in with me? Mayor?
I will ride along with you.
We'll have more information out, but that'll be an exciting kickoff, that major project. So
all in the same area.
I think a 5-meter run would be great. Okay.
Mayor, just wanted to clarify, too, the direction that we're seeking this morning. If council so chooses, this item would appear as a resolution on the September 27th council agenda authorizing the city manager.
Any objection to that resolution? Nope. Thank you. Have your direction.
No. Great. Thank you.
Okay. You want to take a short break now, or you want to get through the... Let's take a short break right now, okay? Let's take about a 5-10-minute break, and then we'll come back and hear about the employee benefits and the zoning code update. Okay. Mr. Manning and crew.
Decided to retire early next month, so we appreciate all she's done for us, for the city, and for the benefits office in particular. Also with me today is Margie Ward, Jody's replacement. Margie is brand new, first time here at council, and she comes to us from the city of St. Petersburg, Florida, where she was the benefits administrator down there. So we're really excited about having Margie with us and her expertise.
Did you bring the baseball team with her?
The Rays wouldn't move, sorry.
Let's take a spring training.
We also have Candace Canestraro from the budget office, and just want to express my appreciation to Candace and to Chuck for the effort that they've provided in partnering with us in this effort. The problem that we have faced over the last several months in exploring ways to best address our rising health care costs and the expenditures that we have seen has been particularly challenging. The problem is compounded really by two important points. First was to address the trust fund itself and making sure that it remains solvent and receives the revenue that we need to meet those growing expenditures. But the second interest that we also took a careful look at was the needs of our employees, and recognizing that any premium increase is likely going to create some impact and some challenges for our employee population, and we understand that. Trying to find that balance between those two arguably competing interests has been a bit of a challenge for us, but we think we've been successful in doing so. I want to assure the council that everyone that has been involved in working in this process has been keenly aware of our employees and have done what we can to make sure that the rates of those premium increases have been kept to a minimum, as well as strategies for trying to reduce the impact of those premiums. So with that having said, the first slide I want to show to you is really just, it's a slide that says we're not alone in this process, that nationally and locally we've seen some dramatic increases in health care costs. Nationwide, they've run about 10.6% in 08 and 09, and we would anticipate in about 10.8% in 2010. City of Mesa did experience a higher level of utilization and higher level of costs in 2008 and 2009 than was above the nation. However, I'm happy to tell you that now that most of 2010 is under our belt, it looks like that trend line has come back down. And so our utilization rate and our expenditures seem to be a bit more in line with the national average. So we're cautiously optimistic that the future forecasts that we have to build into the modeling and the equation is around the 10.8% instead of around the 16-17%, which was some of those higher costs that we had seen. Also, just a reminder to council that employees and retirees really have not seen an increase in premium since about 2008. We didn't feel like we needed to back then. The trust fund was doing fine. The economy was doing fine. And between employees not having merit increases and seeing a 2% reduction in salary, nobody was really interested in increasing those premiums. But unfortunately, that's probably a model that we're not going to be able to sustain for the future. Next, just the current considerations is we are anticipating about a 10.8% per year cost increase. We're not anticipating any increases in either PSPRS or ASRS. Retirement subsidies, and as a result of that, we do think additional
acronyms.
Revenues are going to be needed. I'm sorry?
Those are explained.
Oh, ASRS is the Arizona State Retirement System, and PSPRS is for our sworn employees, the Public Safety Retirement System. And as you know, when our employees retire from the city of Mesa, they can either go on to the ASRS retirement system or they can go on to the Public Safety Retirement System. If they choose to stay on our retirement system, we do receive a subsidy from both ASRS and PSPRS.
When you say employees can choose, mm-hmm. Sworn employees can choose. Non-sworn employees can go on the public safety also? Well, that's what I mean. The way you said Mesa City, Mesa employees.
All employees who are eligible to retire through the Arizona State Retirement System can choose their medical system, and all employees who are eligible to retire through the Public Safety Retirement System can choose their retirement system.
If you're in your own retirement system, that you can just choose the benefits within your system.
Medical
benefits within your system.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Or with the city of Mesa.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes. Most choose our medical plan because it's quite a bit cheaper than what ASRS or PSPRS would offer. Mayor and Council, this is a slide that I showed you back in February when I was here making a presentation to you, and the slide really just states if we were to do nothing more than what we have done over the last several years, that is not raise employee premiums, not expect any additional revenue from these retirement subsidies, and the city continued just to put in the 10.1% increase that they have been putting in over the last several years, that still would not be enough to meet the challenges of the anticipated expenditures. So the space between the top of the blue line representing the revenues and the bottom of the red line really identifies the additional revenues that we would need. So doing nothing really isn't going to work for us because of those particular challenges. The last time that I came to you, I also identified some goals. First, we were going to come back to you and try to agree on an appropriate contribution philosophy between what employees pay and what the city would pay. We wanted to make sure that this contribution philosophy provided employees the same credited amount towards each of the plans. Whatever the city chooses to contribute in a dollar amount, we wanted to make sure that that was the same dollar amount that was provided to employees equally and equitably, that employees in the city would pay consistently the same increases from each year. We were also looking at moving towards an 80-20 citywide medical premium contribution plan, meaning the contributions at some point, 80% of those would be taken on by the city, 20% would be taken on by employees. That seems to be kind of the industry standard in even some of our local jurisdictions. The town of Gilbert, city of Chandler have gone to that kind of model. And the last thing we said, we're probably going to come back to you and identify a phased-in approach, since even way back in February when I was here, we really anticipated that it would be tough to resolve these inequities and these things that are out of balance all in one year. We think we've done that. I want to show you what we've been working on. In terms of contributions with the medical plan, in 2010, the budgeted premium contributions is about $40.6 million. In 2013, we anticipate those required premium contributions to be about $66.2 million. And if you do the math between the two, it would show that between now and 2013, we're going to need to identify about $25.6 million from all sources, be that the retirement subsidies, be it come from employees, be it come from the city. But about $25.6 million is the difference that we think we're going to be needing to find between now and 2013. The next slide for you identifies a couple of pie charts that really show how those expenses and expenditures are broken out. Over on the left-hand side, we've identified for 2010, again, estimating medical expenses would be about $49.3 million. We're only estimating income to be about 40.6, and the difference between the two is about $8.7 million that we anticipate would be a hit to the benefit trust fund. Down at the bottom of that, you identify that the city contributions, the city is picking up about 58% of those contributions, the retirement subsidies about 7. Employees and retirees are picking up about 17% of that, and again, about 18% of that is a hit to the trust fund. You fast forward over a few years, and over on the right-hand side is the 2013 pie chart. And here is where, at the top, Again, we're anticipating about $66.2 million in medical expenses, and with the proposed model that we're about to show you in a few minutes, we believe the proposed premiums will meet those anticipated expenses with no hit to the trust fund. And down at the pie chart, you see that with the forecasted model that we're going to present to you, the city would pick up about 72% of those costs, while employees would then pick up about 23%.
Quick. Council, when you see the chart and we talk about the trust fund, that's just we set aside a dedicated fund to create the reserves necessary to be able to pay off the medical costs during the year. But in a sense, I know we don't show them as city contributions. That really is still city contributions. If the trust fund isn't sufficient to have the reserves, the city has to fund it. So while it shows 58% and then 72%, in reality, the 58% plus the 18% is this year's city
contributions.
We're trying to show is we want to keep this reserve for the purposes of not of being able to be there to be able to manage the fund as far as being able to identify medical costs as a reserve against claims, not necessarily as a draw for premium cost increases. So we're trying to correct that, and we obviously you can't keep drawing down on your trust fund without it eventually going to zero. So part of that is managing this trust fund and maintaining the reserves that are required.
Scott?
Chris, over the last couple of years, as we have had to lay off employees, there's been a bit of a run on our medical benefits that we've noticed, an increase in spending on that. To what extent has that been included in this model or understood by this model?
As Gary pointed out, in the years, was it 08, 09?
2008.
We did see some of that, but this past year we've not seen that same. Even with the layoffs we've had this year, that number's actually come down quite a bit. So we're not, I don't know that there's an association corollary between those two. There just has been a high utilization. Now, I think when we see the restructuring of the different plans that we are moving forward, I think the way that the costs are going to be identified and the cost of those plans, I think that will that could have a mitigating effect factor, because one of the things we're looking at, and they'll talk more about this in our plan design, the cost to the employee is also based upon the utilization of the plan. So if there's plans where you have a high utilization, those costs will continue to rise, and those employees will have to make – it'll ultimately impact the premium for that employee down the road. So I think our plan is the way we've designed it will – I don't know if it'll completely mitigate against utilization, but at least the cost of the plan recognizes higher utilization.
It's a factor.
Yeah. And part of it is, too, is we as the employer, we're really trying to work, and Jody's been really good at this, is trying to also find more proactive ways, wellness programs, so that we can find other ways to access healthcare-related preventative measures so that maybe that utilization of going to the doctor for a variety of different things can be mitigated by better health practices or better, Jody can say it better than I can, but using preventative care measures to do that as opposed to just running to the doctor for and waiting until you get really sick, or better practice, health care practices may prevent some of that.
Along those lines, Jody, we're going to miss you. Outstanding service, customer service, all those decades, so thank you. I think that is a great way to go when you look at the opportunity to be proactive on things. I'm hoping somebody will look way outside the box and look at do we need to partner up with other cities, other organizations. Pretty dramatic stuff. I know there's so many implications on that, but this looks like a pretty good plan that you're bringing forth. I'm worried about the cost impact to employees, but is it the IQ program that you've started? Just a great way to look at things and have people focusing on preventative health measures. And so please, I would hope that you would take that any kind of out-of-the-box, grander scheme look at things that we could possibly do would be appreciated. So.
Okay.
if I may, Councilmember Fincher, that is part of the, or has been part of the strategy with putting in the My Health IQ. That really is as the first step to help employees identify what those health issues are that they have and be able to take those reports back to their doctors and start to develop a plan to be able to mitigate some of those factors. We have been in conversations with some other cities. I've been in conversations with some other organizations as well to try to really beef up our wellness component of the plan, because studies have shown that if people are healthier and if they are leading a healthy lifestyle, chances are very good that they're going to use less of their health insurance dollars.
And you've built in some incentives, although small at the beginning, right, for doing this. And so I think when you're trying to change behavior of large organizations, it's much better to, you know, go on the incentive side and show how it saves money for everybody instead of the penalty side of things. So that's great. Very
good. Councilman Higgins.
Thank you, Mayor. How many people are in this big pie? You know, the big pie chart? How many employees are covered in that?
How many employees?
Yeah.
We have about 3,400 employees, 3,500 employees who are covered under the plan. Now, that does not include retirees.
But they're included in this number.
They are included in there. We have over 1,400 retirees. When you look at, we typically look at lives. We have over 11,000 lives in both of our medical and dental plans.
So that's employees and their families.
Employees and their family members. That's
great. Thank you.
The next slide, really, I wanted to just very briefly talk to you about how these premiums were developed. The first challenge we had was really to try to carefully identify what we anticipated the expenditures were going to be, not only for 2011, but also for 2012 and for 2013. We've worked with our actuaries, we've worked with our consultants, we've worked with the benefits office, we've worked with the budget office, and to the very extent possible, I think we have we've done a good job of trying to anticipate those forecasted costs. That took some effort, some work, but we think we've identified what that is and identifying the trend factors for that. Once we've identified what the forecasted cost, the real work begins in identifying what kinds of premiums, what kinds of contributions do we need to have in order to meet those anticipated costs. What we have done, what the city manager was referring to, Councilmember Summers, was for the first time this year, really in the model that we've put together, we've also identified what's referred to as a utilization factor, that we took a look at each one of the medical plans and we identified how much that plan was being used. What's the utilization rate of that particular plan? And the logic being, the more individuals use services within any particular plan, probably the more that they should pay for that utilization. The other thing that we have included in this new economic model is something referred to as a relativity value. Each one of our plans really has a different level of value. They provide a different level of service. They cost the city a little bit more. So we tried to look just at the benchmark plan that we refer to as our choice plan, and we said, if the benchmark plan really has a factor of a 1.0, how much more value is the copay plan over the choice plan? Or how much more valuable is the plus plan over the choice plan? How much more utilization does the copay plan have over the choice plan or the plus plan over the choice plan? So those total costs were also multiplied by these utilization factors to help us come up with a more well-rounded, better factor in identifying what those future costs are going to be. The last bullet point on this slide really is just the disclaimer that we want to make sure that council and all employees know is that the three-year projected costs certainly could change if healthcare changes, if the rates for some reason significantly go up, if utilization for some reason significantly goes up. But the rates that we're about to show is if you take the snapshot, if you take a picture of what we have today, and all things being equal, that's the picture that we have in 2013, roughly speaking, then those are the premiums that we could look for.
And Gary, we should just mention that, again, you said this earlier in the presentation, but if we had just set the rates for just the cost for the first year only, the premium cost increase, they would be as significant as they will be, they would be much more dramatic. And we just felt like that was going to be a huge hit to the employees in 1 year. So there's two elements that are being, if you would, phased in over the 3 years. There's both the projected rise in healthcare costs that we expect anyway, the 10.8% mm-hmm. each year that would continue. Now, that would happen regardless, but we've also taken the full premium increases that we need to adjust to this year, and we've also tried to spread those out over 3 years. Is that
yes,
correct?
That's correct.
So while there'll be a fairly significant increase in this first year, it is actually spread out over the three-year period to try to provide some relief to the employees. Now, what that means is it means that the city's contribution will be more weighted towards the city in the earlier years to the benefit of the employees, but then we'll phase that in so that by our getting to our goals of what the city portion will be and the employees' portion will be achieved in the third year.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, correct. And we have a slide that will talk about that.
Councilmember Summers.
You discuss how certain services are utilized more, and that so employees should probably, or those services would cost more, employees should pay more for the services that are utilized the most. In one of the issues with healthcare is trying to change behavior and move from a reactive, treating injuries or illnesses or obesity or disease to being preventative or proactive in trying to prevent those things through good behavior. And you're going to be talking about some wellness initiatives in here, but have we considered, as you move forward in this presentation, have we considered how costs might be tied to employees utilizing those services to improve their own health proactively so that if they do get sick, despite taking advantage of all the wellness, they get sick, employee gets cancer, but they're a non-smoker, that there's at least a reward of some kind of a cheaper premium or less cost on the other side of this?
Yes, Councilmember Summers, one of the things that we've looked at pretty carefully are those preventative services. And under the new healthcare regulations, one of the things that we're going to be changing in the plan are those typical preventative services are going to be covered at 100%. Right at the moment, our well man or our well woman benefit is limited to about $400, but during 2011, we're going to be removing that, and all of those preventive type services will be covered at 100%. So that should provide some pretty good incentive for folks to be able to go, don't postpone going and getting those services provided, because it's really not going to be any cost to them. So that's one of the things that we've anticipated doing.
Would that include annual physicals as well, their physician?
Yes, sir.
Very good. Okay.
Page 9 is really just the anticipated slide that I think all employees have really been waiting for, and that is what really will the premiums be in the next few years. I've highlighted for you, just so that we don't have to go through the whole chart, it's there for your convenience, but I've highlighted for you just some examples. If you take a look at the choice plan, which is our benchmark plan, that's that 80-20 plan, currently right now under 2010, employees on the family plan are paying about $168 a month. In 2011, that will go up to $216. In 2012, that will rise to $258. And in 2013, that will then go up to $287. And you will notice that there are some similar increases in many of the other plans. At some point, you'll probably recognize that employees that are on that Choice Plus plan are really taking a significant hit. Those increases go up pretty dramatically. The reason for that is the Plus plan is the most expensive plan. That's really our 90-10 plan, and we were really out of whack when it came to expenditures versus revenues on that. So as we try to correct that inequity, there really are some significant increases that those employees are going to face. Here's the good news, though. The benefits office has just done a terrific job. They have met with all 47, 48 employees that are on that plan. They went through and they identified all of the out-of-pocket costs that those employees had based on their claims in all of 2009. And they said, if you had been on the Choice Plus plan, or I'm sorry, had you been on the copay plan, here's what your out-of-pocket costs would have been. Had you been on the choice plan, here's what your out-of-pocket costs would have been. Surprisingly, not a single employee, not any of those 47 or 48 employees, saved money by being on the plus plan. And in some cases, quite seriously, there were some employees that were paying upwards of $6,000 to $8,000 a year more by being on the plus plan as opposed to being on a couple of the other plans. So we would anticipate lots of movement out of the plus plan when we go through open enrollment again. But there were those employees, a small handful of them, that said, yeah, we recognize we're paying more. We can afford the premiums, and quite simply, we like being overinsured. So, and if that's if that's their decision, that's fine. But we were really trying to make sure that we were educating our consumers on that plan about what the financial implications were about being there.
It serves as a plan for those who may have very large medical needs, and so
yes,
it allows the accommodation of fairly significant claims. So that's it's a choice that someone has to make. On the cost of their premiums versus the ultimate coverage they'll get.
Yes. Really, the next slide is a similar slide for you that will identify what retiree increases are going to be. We have factored in those ASRS and PSPRS subsidies into their premiums as well. But many of our retirees are also going to see an increase. We've already done a little bit of outreach with our retirees. Jody has sent out a letter that went out yesterday identifying that those premiums are going to be going up. To check with the city's website, mesachip.org, where this will be posted. We also have the four-year benefits flyer that's going to be going out on Monday. And Jody has also spoken to the president of RECOM, the retired employees of the City of Mesa, group to identify what those premiums are going to be as well. So we're trying to get some outreach to the retirees as well, which are spread about, as you can imagine, all over the country.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you. And to that point, Gary, I think the outreach to the retirees is very important. Those of us who ran in 2008, I remember going to the forum sponsored by RECOM, and this issue was of significant importance to them. I think they understood the struggles that the city was going through and would be going through. They also relayed to us, again, their concerns about commitments made to them by the city in the past as well. And so I'm hopeful that we can do some extensive outreach and discussion with the retirees group to hopefully arrive at some consensus or understanding from them on why you're doing what you're doing so that we can... again, I hope as we move forward with our discussions here at the council level that we can come to some agreement or consensus on that direction. But that was the key issue that the five of us faced in 2008, and I'm sure that their concerns have not changed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I appreciate that, Councilmember Kavanaugh, and any help the council could give us in providing that information to our retirees would be appreciated as well.
Councilman Richens and then Dina.
Help me understand the philosophy between, you have a column that says employee contribution, and then on the retirees, there's the retiree contribution, so I'm presuming that that's the amount that the employee or the retiree pays. What's the philosophy behind the retiree having their portion be less than an active employee?
Councilmember Richens, part of the challenge that we have in terms of pricing our plans has to do with the rate of the expenditures that particular group incurs. And studies have shown that as we age, we tend to use our medical care more frequently, and we tend to also use our health insurance much more frequently. So that's one of the reasons why you're seeing the total premiums on those rate charts be higher than they are for the active employees. Now, in looking at the contribution strategy, we have kept the city's contribution to the retirees, for those retirees who have 20 years of service, is the same as the employees are receiving on a monthly basis. So we take that amount and subtract it from the total to get a difference. The retirement system subsidy is actually used to offset the portion of the premium that the retirees would be responsible for paying. So that's the main reason why their particular premiums are, or the amount that they pay in their contributions is actually lower, because the retirement system subsidy is being applied to that.
Thank
you.
You're quite welcome.
And mine was actually, I'm going to go, what, I don't understand, and where is that retirement subsidy coming from?
Again? That retirement system subsidy, Councilmember Higgins, comes from the Arizona State Retirement System and the Public Safety Retirement System.
So, Jody, it's a benefit. In addition to the what they receive from their pension pay, they also have this contribution for retiree health benefit, right?
That is correct. That is part of their benefit. Now, if they choose to stay in the retirement system health insurance plan, that subsidy is used to offset their portion of that premium if they were to stay in that particular plan. Now, if you look at the premiums for the plans that are offered through both the Arizona State Retirement System and the Public Safety Retirement System, they are by far much higher than what our employees are paying for their health insurance. So it is a benefit that they are now applying to their premium here.
And how does it affect, how does this chart get affected when they're Medicare eligible?
Councilmember Higgins, I'm glad that you asked that question. Our employer, our retirees, when they become Medicare eligible, we do require them to be enrolled in both Part A and Part B. Part A being the hospital portion, Part B being the professional services. They pay a premium for that Part B portion, which is about $100 a month. For the last several years, we have been giving our retirees a discount of $60 off of their premium because of the fact that they're also paying Medicare, and we benefit because of the lower costs that we have to pay as their secondary insurer. This year, actually in 2011, we will be increasing that amount to $100. So that is now equal to, or at least very close to, what they are paying for their Medicare premium.
But the cost of the city is less for their overall care, right? Medicare becomes primary. They pay the first 80, right, and then their secondary, which is City Mesa, pays 80 of the 20 that's left over.
That is correct. That is correct. Okay. Now, one thing I did not mention is that their Arizona State and Public Safety Retirement System subsidy also decreases when they turn age 65 and become Medicare eligible. So if we did not offer that discount, they would actually be paying more than they were prior to the being enrolled in Medicare. Okay. So with that discount, that actually then keeps their premium close to or a little bit less than what they pay without the Medicare.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Alex?
Thank you, Mayor. In support of Councilmember Kavanaugh's comments, I think it's really important for the retirees. Most, not all, are in a circumstance, obviously, that we all know that they don't have the earning capacity anymore and are significantly impacted. Feedback that I had, I think we just had a prescription medication increase on the deductible. And actually, this last year, is that correct?
Councilmember Finter, yes, we did have it. We had an increase not on their deductibles, but we had an increase on the maximum copayment that they pay for a prescription. So, for example, if you were to purchase a prescription by mail order for a 3-month supply, if that particular prescription were, say, a $20,000 prescription, which there are many of them out there that are like that,
wow,
you would actually, under the stipulations of the plan, you would pay either 20 or 25% of that $20,000. What we have done is to cap that at $200 for that 3-month period, so that a member, regardless of the cost or the total cost of their prescription, they are going to only be responsible for that $200 a month for the 3-month supply. That is an increase, or it was an increase this year over prior years where it was $100.
Right. I did get some feedback, so I need to find out more about that so we can educate the retirees along those lines.
Okay.
But
certainly.
Yeah, and that's a concern. I know we have the Medicare when they hit a certain age. It's that space in between as they grow older and are not as able to bring income in. These really have an impact on the retirees. So I'm really supportive of whatever we can do to look at that area and make sure that those folks that have served the city for long years are unable to, you know.
Councilmember Finter, I would like to say that over the last several years, we have had a very, very good relationship with our retirees. I have gone to their meetings frequently over the last several years, and in fact, they did invite me to their October meeting, but I will no longer be an employee at that point, so Margie is going to take that on for us.
Yeah.
I'll be out there.
So you're going to be a
I'll be on the other side of the fence.
In support of us, by the way.
Yes.
We hope.
The next slide really is something that Chris had referred to with our phased approach. We saw that if we tried to correct all of these inequities in 1 year, the premiums were just going to be simply too high. So we have planned for a three-year phase-in of these increases. So really by 2013, the medical premium contribution for the city will be 80% of that benchmark plan. It's a little higher than that for the next couple of years, but that we worked that out so that it lessened the impact to employees. And again, we just want to emphasize that all things being equal, if there are changes in utilization or costs, that the premiums will have to be adjusted. Page 12 really is just a picture that identifies once we implement this new forecasted model and premium contribution, we fully anticipate that by 2013 our revenues will meet our expenditures. Unfortunately, that means the city is going to have to come up with about $19 million above the budgeted funds between now and 2013. But we're cautiously optimistic that with this new approach, we're finally going to be there in meeting those expenditures. The next slide really is just to identify of the $25.6 million that we're going to have to find revenues in some way, about 74% of that is going to be picked up and shouldered by the city, while 26% would be picked up and captured by the employees. Next slide, really, we wanted to identify for you some plan design changes that are going to be required as a result of the new healthcare legislation. First, covering adult children up to age 26 will be required starting in 2011. We're also removing the maximum lifetime limits and annual maximums on essential services. Right now, those limits are about $2 million, and we've never had any employee exceed the $2 million, so that's really not a big deal for us. No co-insurance or co-pays for preventative services, and Councilmember Summers, that's what I was referring to in being able to pay those for 100%. And lastly, the regulations do require that we develop some sort of an external appeal process with an external body that can hear appeals from employees that feel as though we're not administering the plan appropriately. Coverage highlights some of the good news. No changes to deductibles, co-insurances, or co-pays. No change to the out-of-pocket maximums on any of those plans. We are going to begin requiring that those who go to out-of-network services, we're only going to pay what is allowable. The old term used to be reasonable and customary. Apparently, we can't use that anymore. But the allowable rate is what we're going to be telling out-of-network providers is all we're going to pay. We think we'll probably save some money by doing that. There will be no changes to the dental network with one important addition. We're going to contact Blue Cross Blue Shield because they have a dental network through Blue Cross Blue Shield. We're going to fold that into the background of our dental plan and say, if you choose to go to a Blue Cross Blue Shield contracted dentist, their rates are going to be probably less than the dentist that you go to now. As a result, you're going to get more bang for your buck, and the city is going to get more bang for their buck. Not that we're going to be requiring employees to go, but there will be a financial incentive for them to do so. So we thought we would try that in 2011 to see how much more money we could save by doing that. The short-term disability carrier is going to be changing on October 4th. You all will have an opportunity to vote on that carrier, and there will be lower rates as a result of that RFP that we went through. And we are not anticipating any changes in our vision plan as well. Want to remind the council as well as employees that open enrollment for us this year is October 25th through November the 5th, and we are going to have our benefits fair that's on October 27th. It's going to be at the convention center from 8:30 to 2:30, and we're going to make a real hard push in educating employees about their benefits. One of the sessions that we're going to have is really what benefit plan is right for you. And we're going to talk to them about their personal situation and their claims and try to guide them. Unlike the 47 people that are in the PLUS plan, many of them probably shouldn't be there. We're going to be proactive in really helping employees identify what plan they should be going through. Blue Cross Blue Shield is going to be there. Our vision carrier is going to be there. We're going to talk about short-term disability and long-term disability and employee assistance. And we've got a laundry list of topics that we're going to be covering on that day and encouraging employees to go to those brief seminars, really to become educated about their benefits. So with that,
Member Summers, that was just a quick question on the age. We're potentially having to cover children up to the age of 26. Does it, if an employee for himself or herself and their spouse buys the 90-10 plan, Do we also have to cover that child on the 90-10, or does it allow them to say we offer the 50-50 plan?
Councilmember Summers, the regulation states that any dependent child up to age 26 must be insured with no limitations whatsoever. So yes, indeed, if they were to be insured under the 90-10 plan, then that child
could
be. You
have to cover them on the 90-10
yes,
plan.
Yes, sir.
Great. Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Go ahead. When we pick up the Medicare benefit, it's just for the retiree, not their spouse. Or do we pick it up for both the husband?
Councilmember Higgins, we do pick it up for both. Now, we do limit the $100 discount to two members. So if they happen to have a retiree and a spouse and perhaps a disabled child who also has Medicare, we're only going to give them two discounts.
That's very generous. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Mayor, these are the rates that will be going out to the employees. We've already met with unions, some employee task force groups, department heads are moving forward. We have a presentation. As you can see, it'll go online for the employees now because enrollment begins, as you saw, next month. So we'll be moving forward with this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Save the best for last. Mr. Sheffield, 5 minutes. Councilmember Kavanaugh says you got 5 minutes.
I will do my best, Mayor.
Good response. I'll give you 10. Nah, take whatever time you need. This is important.
Well, it's tying up the loose ends so we can go forward with our adoption process. That's really what we're chatting about here. First thing, again, just kind of emphasizing, we're trying to equalize land use impact and form, trying to get a balanced approach to our zoning ordinance. This is the last of three conversations I've had with you trying to get consensus so we can go forward with our final draft. The first thing we'd like to talk to you about is that if you take a look at the current public review draft, they have a chapter in there called TMX. It was an ordinance. It was a set of regulations that was written with the idea of using the same land use approach, this use-based approach to zoning for transit-oriented development. As you are aware, we have also contracted with a consultant regarding form-based ordinances. In taking a look at that, staff is, in evaluating these types of things, we are fairly certain that the best approach for transit-oriented development is to use the form-based code as opposed to using the TMX approach. The difference is that if we go forward with both options right now, we feel we're going to have competing regulations. And so based on that idea, rather than having the competing regulations, our idea would be to go ahead and remove the TMX from the final draft, go forward and basically just kind of hold that section and get the form-based code when the form-based code is ready, probably in the spring. This kind of talks about some of the comparisons between the two. For the most part, you're going to get more of an illustrative type of code when you go with a form-based approach. What we believe to be a little bit more predictable form in those particular areas. And I think the biggest advantage to the form-based code, more than anything else, is the idea that it organizes the area to work as a whole. So even though you have individual property owners that might be moving in slightly different directions, the more prescriptive approach that's taking place in the form-based code gets everybody working so that the public places that are in between basically creates a synergy for that particular area. Whereas when you go with the standard Euclidean approach, you have a lot of different people working in a lot of different directions, and you don't get necessarily a coherent whole. So for that reason, if the council agrees, we would like to go forward and basically remove the TMX district from the final draft and then make use of the form-based code approach instead.
Any problem with that? I think it's a great move.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. These are some reminders, basically, to some of the changes we're making to administration and processing of the actual zoning code. We've added the temporary use element. This basically kind of expands the idea that it adds a time element to land use, the idea that there might be some uses that could be temporary use of a property for a 2 or a 4 year period as opposed to just special events Right now, the zoning ordinance assumes that all land uses are permanent land uses and requires permanent improvements. This allows for some of those interim activities to take place for some of those properties, and we've added that to the code. We've added a zoning clearance requirement. Basically, this replaces an aspect of the code that, quite frankly, is not there anymore. It was there in 1988, but it's not there now. Basically, what it says is that before you start using vacant property, we need to make sure that the use of that property itself is consistent with the code. You can't use it for something that's not authorized by the zoning ordinance. And this is something that we automatically build into the plan review process. So this is an additional step. It's just something that the plan review folks will work into their plan review. We've updated our historic preservation processing. We've incorporated the updated decisions the council made for with regard to the design review board. Nobody else in this room is probably as excited about this next one as me, but we've actually added rules of interpretation and measurement. I actually have rules for how I do my job now, which is, I like it. Nobody else may, but I like it. The use of, we have, well, in addition to that, rather than going with the standard laundry list of land uses, we've gone to more broader land use classifications. People are very creative in how they use land uses, and it doesn't necessarily match exactly with the code. By going to these broader classifications, it makes it a little bit easier for us to say, yes, this is analogous to that. Therefore, this use is a C2 use, it's a C1 use, or whatever that might be. Any issues with the administration and processing? Like I said, I'm trying to kind of go through these kind of quick. Okay, the next issue is something that was raised during the comment period by some of the zoning attorneys that practice in front of the council. And that's the role of the general plan and how we actually administer the zoning code. One of the things we wanted to do is to remind you of some of the enabling statutes related to the relationship between the general plan and the zoning code. Specifically under ARS 9462, all zoning and rezoning ordinance or regulations shall be consistent with and conform to the adopted general plan of the municipality. Going a little bit further, the idea is that the ordinance shall be construed in a manner that it will further the implementation of and not be contrary to the goals, policies, and applicable elements of the general plan. One of the fallacies that we see on the planning staff side of this is that some people have a tendency to look at the 12 or 14 elements that are in the general plan and concentrate on the one land use element. They tend to ignore the fact that we have a downtown element, or we have an energy conservation, or we will have a energy conservation element, or we will have a utilities element or a transportation element. All of those policies together work as a whole toward achieving the vision of the city, not just the land use element itself. When staff reviews cases, we're not reviewing just for the land use, but we're reviewing for how that land use works in relationship to all the other elements that go along with the general plan. It's a fairly comprehensive review.
Gordon?
Yes.
Councilman Kevin has a question.
Yeah, and just a question with regard to the general plan and the elements and how we work with it. It's my understanding the legislature has extended the time to 2014 for the city to adopt or readopt our general plan. And you indicated we do have a lot of elements that are important, some that we need to adopt. And what I think is very helpful is with the adoption of all the changes that we're doing, I think it sets us up perfectly well to also begin that process to start looking at each of those elements, so that by the time 2014 rolls around, we will have made a comprehensive review of those, added what we need to, and hopefully make the 2014 process easier. Do you think the adoption of the overall code changes that we've been talking about for this past year will help the general plan process move in a more smooth and effective way?
I think so, and I think what it does is it raises to the level some of the questions of the. There are elements of the general plan that work perfectly fine. There are other elements of the general plan that may need some tweaking, and others that are just flat out outdated. And it helps us to sit here and start taking a look at that analysis, raising those critical elements up to a point where we can start working on those and possibly making amendments and identifying those other areas that maybe we don't necessarily need to work in quite as much. Mr. Wesley might have some additional comments with that. Okay. Okay. What we've done basically in kind of looking at that enabling legislation and then taking a look at what we're doing with the zoning code, obviously with the purpose and intent of the code, we're trying to implement the city's general plan. The zoning ordinance is a primary tool in order to be able to do that. It provides a guide for the physical development of the city, the arrangement of land uses, These are all purposes that are actually in the zoning ordinance itself. Again, we're trying to be harmonious, convenient, consistent with the general plan. We use the general plan a lot in how we make, in how we evaluate cases, and we present those recommendations to you and the Planning and Zoning Board. The question that comes up with our friends on our zoning attorney friends is the idea that this particular section here, 11.15, which has to do with, request to modify the zoning classification of land must be consistent with the City of Mesa general plan. They generally don't have an issue with that. We're modifying zoning. State law seems to be fairly clear about that. Where they question this, though, is that the idea is that each application for what we use to implement the general plan and the zoning classifications, things like special use permits, council use permits, site plan reviews, site plan modifications, shall be reviewed and evaluated for consistency with the general plan. We don't necessarily say it has to be letter on, dead set, match up with the general plan, but we feel that there ought to be a review and evaluation for that, and that review and evaluation ought to be presented to the City Council and to the Planning and Zoning Board when these cases come forward for evaluation. Continuing with this, this is the current definition that we have in the present zoning code for special use permits. It's a discretionary authorization. The proposed activity is in conformance with the intent of both the code, the general plan, and the other adopted policies and plans that might relate to that particular plan. We've kind of expanded that a little bit by the role of the general plan in the use permits under the proposed code to say that the approval of the proposed project will advance the goals and objectives of the general plan as consistent with the policy of the general plan and other applicable city plans or policies. Again, we're bringing that general plan evaluation into the review of the case itself toward advancing that. Again, the idea is that the use permits, for example, rather than being black and white, there are not going to be always cases where a conditional use permit is going to be appropriate, but the general plan provides guidance to the council or to the Board of Adjustment or to staff, for that matter, as to when those use permits are appropriate. It provides those policies that we evaluate that use permit against. Using the general plan to help us evaluate cases as they come through. Location, size, design, and the operating characteristics of the proposed project are consistent with the purpose of the district where it's located and conform with the general plan and other applicable city plans or policies. Bringing in those guidelines and those policies the council adopts for evaluation of specific cases, the example being, for example, freeway signs, or bringing in the sub-area plans like the Citrus Area Plan or the Lehigh Area Plan or the West Main Plan or even the Central Main Street Plan that's being evaluated now. We bring in those additional plans and policies in the evaluation of these cases.
Gordon, how much of that determination is objective and how much of it is subjective? Because, I mean, you're talking about plans which have goals and priorities, things like that, and those are some pretty subjective standards sometimes. And when you're talking about conformity with what are some of the words we used, conforms to all of the following criteria. I mean, that tends to be somewhat objective. So I know one of the complaints and one of the issues I had in developing was you'd walk in and you thought that it generally conformed to objectives, and then you were thrown specific numbers and things saying, no, it's one unit short.
And
that was one of the examples I had where the general plan planned it for, you know, medium high density for, I'm going to pick a number, 15 to 20 units, and you came in with 13 units, and staff said, no, it doesn't comply, therefore we're not going to do it, but it complied with everything else. I mean, does this take you to that kind of detail, or when you're throwing in an area plan, does it leave it up to the administrator or whoever's looking at this to be a little bit more subjective in what it means to conform?
The kinds of things that the kind of applications we're talking about are generally the kind of cases that go forward in public hearings. And what we're doing is evaluating these on a staff basis as to this is what the staff opinion is. And then we include that in the staff report. So it's not necessarily a hard, fast line. This is where the limit is.
It's a judgment call.
Yes. And so
taking all the different
right.
aspects in, your judgment calls whether it conforms or not.
The staff report basically is going to be a series of recommendations of how the staff advises the hearing board or the council as to what those our interpretation of the general plan in that specific circumstance is. There may be folks who disagree with us, and they may present alternative arguments to that, and it basically is going to be up to the judgment of the hearing board or the council to determine which arguments make sense in the context of that particular case.
But once again, at the end of the day, the establishment or the determination of conformity is with the officer or that based on all the evidence and all the things provided. But
Absolutely.
It's a judgment call, so whether it does it. Okay.
Yes, it is. That's basically the argument that we've heard. We wanted to sit here and ask the council, do they agree with the idea of continuing to use policies such as the general plan, as the guidelines, as the sub-area plans, as part of the evaluation of these individual cases, as well as special use permits and other types of things. We had this discussion last night with the Planning and Zoning Board. They've asked us to work on the language a little bit, so it may not be quite as absolute as it appears to be now.
Well, that's sort of what I'm getting at, because it does seem like there's some very, 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 very well-defined lines that, and Councilmember Kavanaugh said he kind of liked it, in the real world, those hard lines are very hard to apply, because especially if you're looking at special use or things, I guess you're dancing around those hard lines, and that's what you're trying to decide, is whether, if it's a special use, that means that there's some sort of deviation from some standard.
Right.
And so you're trying to figure out whether that deviation still fits in with the overall acceptability range, whatever that is, or whether it doesn't.
Right.
So, you know, I can see a conflict there between what we're trying to accomplish and how it works in the real world. And I think that's what you're saying, Planning and Zoning Board.
We anticipate making some edits to this, but the overall goals that what we're trying to
And achieve. I would agree with you, but as I'm reading this, it seems like it takes us towards some of those hard lines, and I can just see some conflicts happening. And not that you can avoid all those conflicts, you never will. That's why you have special use permits, that's why you have boards. But as much as we can avoid that and once again get back to the general premise of what a form-based approach is, which is much more goal and objective and standard-driven as it is specific rules, and I know that's tough, and trying to match that up with some things that are flat out hard lines. You got to have some hard lines somewhere,
right.
And general plan is certainly the case when you start throwing out densities and those and specific uses and those kind of things. I don't know how you merge those, but.
We'll try to, again, there may be some edits that soften the approach a little bit, but keep the same basic premise.
Yeah, we don't want to give up the standards. We just want to make it to where there's flexibility so people can actually go above what we want. Dave, you had a question? Okay.
Okay. That's where we're at right now. Like I said, well, there might be some minor tweaks in the language, but based on what I understand, we'll try to get a final draft out probably by the first or second week of October.
Okay. Any other questions for Gordon? Alex?
I know we're tough on time. I had a chance from our last spirited study session discussion to visit with Mr. Sheffield, and one of the suggestions that came up with regard to the transition of a residential house on a corner into more of a retail use was a set of standards, and I was looking on under the use permits on page 6. I think the suggestion was made is maybe we need to come up with a set of guidelines that can be utilized by staff and the Board of Adjustments to be able to find the right fit, find that Joe's Barbershop that fits perfectly. And I think there's some room and some work there that could be done to kind of alleviate some of my concerns on that one specific issue. So hopefully, I think, weren't you looking for some direction, or is there?
Yeah, if that's something that you feel, there's certainly some of the use permits and some of the other documents that we have. We probably need a set of guidelines. So as we get closer to the implementation of the actual code itself, we'll probably be bringing those forward to council and asking for your direction on those specific items.
Well, like I said last time, there have been cities who have successfully implemented those and have achieved the nice balance of reuse that protects the neighborhood but also establishes a level of quality. I mean, there's good, great examples where that's been successful in other cities, and sure. I would think that there's a lot of work that's already been done in other cities because it's been successful.
Sure.
I
can think of two or three cities off the top of my head. So.
And it would be great if we could talk to them because you know, they've already done the work, and what did they do to get to that successful balance?
Sure.
Where you have a reuse that actually serves the neighborhood and doesn't detract from it, but actually adds that amenity. So it's been done. I know we can do it. Like you said, if you know those people, I'd be interested to see what they did, what steps they took, what guidelines they have that ensure the kind of quality that I think Councilmember Pinter and the rest of the council are looking for.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Anyone want to talk about the meetings or conferences attended? Okay, Mr. Brady.
Just remind council this evening, 6:30 p.m., we'll have our District 2 Building Stronger Neighborhoods kickoff meeting. Excuse me. It'll be at Porter Elementary School, and our next study session is Thursday, September 23rd. Thank you.
And I will not be at that study session. I know that's disappointing for all of you. Let's hear it.
You'll be there in spirit.
I will be there in spirit, yes. Thank you. Okay, both of us, Dave and I are going to be gone for that. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak from the public?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay. I have a motion from Councilmember Richens to adjourn, a second from Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. We are adjourned.